Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Good morning. Buenos dias. Bonjour. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy winter solstice. Welcome to Mobile Metron, coming to you from inside my loft in downtown Atlanta. It looked a little too gray to be outside up on the roof this morning. Hey, Kevin, you're the first one I see on here. Those of you that are logging on, hey, Susan. I know that there's this ring thing here. I'm looking into a ring light and it reflects. There's nothing I can do about it. And hey, Lisa. Somebody asked me, it also, if you notice, has a blue tint to it. It's because these glasses are, there's a coating they have in them for online use. Hey, Stephanie. And somebody asked me, I don't know if some of you guys, hey, Leona and Ernie. Hey, Keith. Hey, happy birthday, Keith. Sorry, I forgot to say something about it Wednesday night. I meant to. Hey, Howie. Glad you're here. Hey, Avery. Years ago when I ministered down in Colombia, the people kept seeing a blue light around me. And when I came back home, it actually stayed on me for a few days before it finally dissipated. It was like Moses coming off Sinai and the light finally did dim. But somebody asked me, they said, you know, I'm still seeing a blue light on you. I'm like, no, it's the tint on my glasses. I wish. Hey, Lisa, good to see you too. I'm assuming things are okay with your mom. We're sending prayers out to you. Let me know if I looked at your page a little while ago to see if there was any update. Hey, Danny. Hey, Carl. Hey, Pam. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Thanks, Avery. Appreciate that. Little festive. Thank you. Thank you, Susan. Hey, Fred. Yeah, I got, what have I got? Reindeer and Christmas trees. And hey, Ed from up in Knoxville. Let y'all say good morning to each other. I've asked Ken to make me another cup of coffee, if he would. I haven't had enough this morning. Hey, Kevin. Kevin's somebody that I was able to meet finally in New York this week. He's from Trinidad, but he lives in New York, and we've been Facebook friends for a while. But we just got back from New York and was able to meet him for a little bit. That was great. And, you know, it's interesting when you meet somebody who's on the same page with you, it doesn't take long to pick up the energy. Like, as soon as you meet, there's a connection. And, oh, thanks, Pam. I'm glad you enjoyed him. Hey, Barbara. But after he left, because we just had a short amount of time, we had to get up to St. Patrick's Cathedral. He texted me, said, I feel so energized from our visit. And I understand what he meant, because it doesn't take long. When you're on the same page, on the same wavelength, you feel the energy immediately. Hey, Leander. Hey, Heather. Hey, Karen. Karen, that was really cool what you told Wednesday night about the autistic boy. I've thought about that several times. Hey, Jeffrey. Always appreciate your good, positive feedback on everything. Hey, Jason. From up in God's country, up there close to the Biltmore House. Hey, Tina. Tina, you're supposed to be at the movement. What are you doing watching at 11 o'clock? I'm going to tell on you. No, I'm not. Your secret's safe with me. Thanks for all the good feedback. You know what I did notice this week? It's the first time this has ever happened. Pleasure meeting you too. I enjoyed our... Yeah, I agree, Kevin. Exactly. Hey, Kimberly. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Oh, you brought it to me in a New York cup. That's cool. Hey, Eric from up in Chicago. Is it snowing up there where you are? Good. What was I saying? Oh, what I noticed this week when we went to New York, a lot of times when we've gone and posted a lot of pictures, because I like to be, hey, Cheryl. I like to be in the moment. I mean, I like to post pictures while we're at a place. Because sometimes you'll be there and you get feedback. People say, oh, we've been there. There's a really cool restaurant around the corner. And it's I like the immediacy of it. Thank you, Jeffrey. I have a problem with this light. First of all, it always makes my hair look too gray, which I don't like. And there's just only so much you can do. Anyway, usually somebody will post, "Don't you guys ever work? Why are you always out of town?" I didn't see any of that this time. It was all just like, "Oh, your pictures are beautiful. We loved experiencing it with you." And I love that. Oh, okay. Safe trip, Ed. Hey, Winifred. Good to see you. Congratulations on the new addition to your family. I haven't talked to Winnie Mae yet, but the baby looks beautiful. Hey, Constance. Anyway, it was just good. I love when people say, you know, we weren't able to go this year, so we lived vicariously through you. This was a very different trip. It's the first time I've been going to New York, I don't know, 25, 26 years at least. At least once a year, sometimes twice a year. And hey, Raul, good to see you on here. And some people say, why are you going back? Haven't you been before? That's like saying, why are you going back to the beach? Haven't you been before? Yeah, you go somewhere that you like over and over again because you love that place. The first time I've ever gone to New York that we didn't see a show, and it's just as well because they started shutting them down because of the COVID outbreak up there. But it really wasn't high priority with us this time. Anyway, I'm kind of seeing everything I wanted to see. This time, hey, Tony. This time it was more about people. Like I said, we met Kevin and got to spend time with Dominic, who is just as, he's just as Dominican as he ever was. The only person watching this who will know what I mean is Howie. But I told him, I mean, New York's a madhouse at Christmas. And they had you can't go right up to the tree because of the tree that was vandalized the other day that's down the street, which they've already replaced that. You'd never know anything had happened. But, I texted Dominic and I said, "We'll meet you beside the great tree at 30 Rock at 5:45. And so, you know, you're like in a sea of people. It's already dark by that time. Can't see him. And we finally saw him. He's funny Pentecostal. He starts shouting and speaking in tongues right out there. It was so funny. He had me laughing immediately. We had a good time with him. And then we had dinner Friday night with, it's the only way I can explain the relationship is say it's one of his bosses. The guy's not really his boss, but kind of. And he's just taken a new job, and he and his significant other are up there in New York. I'd never met her before, and we just had a wonderful time. And this trip was more about just spending time with people that we love and connecting with them and walking around and seeing the sights. It was funny because Friday, we just felt like walking. So we walked from Times Square, we walked all the way to Bloomingdale's because I said, I might buy a shirt. We'll see if there's something in there. And there wasn't anything. I mean, it was crazy. Like some of the prices on stuff, you want to go, are you kidding me? You're really charging this for this? This is ridiculous. I mean, if I saw it and I really liked it, I would buy it, but there's nothing. So we just enjoyed the walk. And then we walked from there to Saks. Same kind of thing. Walked all through there. It's beautifully decorated. Didn't buy a thing. He said, how far is Macy's? I said, well, it's down 34th Street. It's a bit of a walk. We walked all the way to Macy's. I finally did buy a shirt down there that I liked that they had on sale. Not that I'm just always looking for sales, but it was funny to walk to all those fabulous department stores and not buy anything. And I think sometimes the more content you become with your life, the less things even matter to you. I mean, I love nice things. I love nice clothes or whatever, but just, I don't know, felt more appropriate to give. We were given this week, even to the, we took Marta back from the airport, and let me tell you, Marta at 11 o'clock at night is a whole other thing, and I won't even begin to explain to you all that happened on the train, but we were giving to people as we made it all the way into our building. But anyway, it was an excellent trip. Thanks for your good feedback on everything, and we enjoyed it. thank you to everybody that came out Wednesday night for our movie night. It was had such a great time. And not everybody wore, we call them ugly sweaters. Some of them weren't ugly. They were cool, actually. Not everybody that you see, there were more people there than the picture that I posted that BJ took of people with the sweaters on, but I did want to get a picture of that. And that was really cool. Some of you really went all out. Ken, by show of applause, won the best sweater. So that was cool. And thank you again to Charles for making the movies possible. We didn't show all of them. I showed a little bit of The Preacher's Wife with Whitney Houston, which is a remake of The Bishop's Wife, originally made with Loretta Young and Cary Grant, David Niven. And we showed her the clip of her singing Joy to the World, which is an incredible arrangement. I also wanted to show, in that movie, she does a Dottie Rambo song, I Go to the Rock. And there wasn't a significant enough clip from the movie to show that, so Charles showed her singing that in another event, and that was very cool. And then we showed some of Charlie Brown Christmas and the last part of It's a Wonderful Life. And it was just great. People brought goodies, and there wasn't even a charge this year. Usually we have to charge people because we cater it and rent a event space. It was just totally different this year and appropriate to the times that we're living in. Everything is very scaled down right now. We're still in a pandemic. So, you know, it's the new normal, and you're going to have to learn to coexist with it and not let it get the best of you. But anyway, thank you for coming out. I'm assuming we will be back in the theater. This is the plan for now. We'll be back in the theater first Sunday of January, which is the, what did I say? That was the second? January 2nd? I think it's the second. And then we will be in Ella J, Georgia, January 22nd and 23rd for our meditation weekend number 13. And as always, just so you know, Metron people are super conscientious about, like I noticed even when we, this last year, when we would even go to the park, they were still socially distancing and wearing masks, which is probably unnecessary when you're outside, but you know, I appreciate that I've got people in my world that are willing to err on the side of safety, not because they're scared, but because they want to be a blessing to humanity. So if you come to a Metron event, everybody's very aware. When we were in the theater last Sunday, people were very spread out. And that's fine. I'm glad that people take it seriously and know that it's not a hoax. And you already know what I feel about vaccinations. Please don't be offended that I'm going to say this. I swear I have nobody in mind. I'm just putting this out there. If you're super afraid of a vaccine or a booster, watch out, because if you go take it, you might have a reaction, and the reaction is happening possibly because of your fear of it. And there's nothing, I'm just saying, you know, we got vaxxed and boosted as soon as possible. And if I felt anything, it was a little bit of soreness in my arm, just like a typical shot. Please don't send me an email telling me your story. I know that's not true for everybody, but I do know there are some people who were very super reluctant to take it. And when they finally did, they kind of had an adverse reaction to it. And I'm not trying to shame you. I'm trying to help you to say, if you're going to do something, your attitude, like this is true for doctors across the board. If you're going to go to a doctor, it's got to be somebody you believe in. Otherwise your own fear will work against you. That's all I'm saying. You don't need to tell me your story or your exception to the rule. I did not say that was true for everybody. I'm saying if you're going to do something, the just shall live by faith. You just need to believe it's going to work, and your own belief system will help you probably as much or more than the vaccine will. But I don't believe that science and spirituality are at odds with one another. So I believe that you can believe for the best and believe in divine health and all that stuff, but still do what you can to not just keep yourself safe, but keep you from spreading it to somebody else. And I don't need your statistics that you saw on some news channel about how they don't work. The bottom line is people wear seatbelts and still die in car accidents, but we still wear seatbelts. People lock their doors at night and people still break into their homes, and yet we still lock our doors at night. People put smoke detectors in their houses and their houses still burn down, and yet we still have smoke detectors. So nothing is a panacea or an end-all be-all. You just do what you can. And I'm preaching to the choir here. I think all of my listeners already adhere to that. You know what? I've got such an important word for you today. I'm not even gonna do the affirmations or the breathing today. I'm just gonna get right into it because I'm feeling this word really strongly. I published the Gospels in the Now a few years ago. Jeanette down in Florida just bought it, and I appreciate her. Thank you, Tony. Yeah, exactly. But my original plan was to do the entire Bible, and I haven't ruled that out. I mean, the Protestant canon is 66 books. That's a lot. But I have done, aside Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I've done a little bit of Acts, and I've done some Old Testament passages of a paraphrase. And one of them is probably the most famous Old Testament Christmas passage. And it's Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6 and 7. King James says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And he shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Prince of Peace, the Everlasting Father," which the Hebrew actually says the Revealer of the Father. "And of the increase of his government there shall be no end." This is what, this was my paraphrase of it for Isaiah in the Now. It says, "For unto us, not unto me, not unto you, but unto us, the collective corporate community of mankind, the household of humanity, unto all of us, a child is born. Unto us, the global family, a son is given. And the responsibility of the government will rest on his broad shoulders. In fact, all the governments of all the peoples of the world will ultimately recognize him as their one true foundation, for the earth is his and he belongs to all of us. He will be the physical embodiment of the I Am, the God who defies description. And in an attempt to define the indefinable, he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase and expansion of his kingdom and government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign initially from David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing it and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on into the eternal now. The passionate zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this." And thank you for the feedback that I get on my writing. I've put a lot of time and effort into that, and I appreciate when I have people who respond to it. I want to share some things. Some of this is going to be review for you, but I'd like to pull all this together because this is, the last time I'll speak. Next time we talk, it'll be after Christmas. And as I've told you many times, and most of you already knew, when people say Jesus is the reason for the season, no, he absolutely is not. December 25th is the winter solstice, and pagans celebrated the winter wonderland on December 25th for millennia before Jesus was born in Bethlehem. Jesus was actually born in April. Most historians say probably the first week of April. The Catholic Church over the years Christianized all of the pagan observances. And so sometime around, I forgot what century it was, but at a certain point, and it wasn't just a one-time thing. I mean, there was Constantine was involved with it and the Pope. And anyway, they started celebrating the birth of Jesus during the winter solstice. And Jesus and would be the first one to tell you, no, this is not about my birthday. First of all, Jesus never told anybody to observe his birthday anyway. That's just something that people started doing. So, and I'm all about it. I love December 25th, and I love all things Christmas. In fact, I love it more every year. Jesus is one of the reasons for the season. Now, let me. I'm just going to give you several scriptures here, and I want to sort of follow train of thought. The first one is Genesis 1:26, and it's where it's the word Elohim, which means literally gods, plural. In the King James, it gets translated, "Let us make man in our image." It doesn't use the pronoun me and my. It uses us and our. So you have to understand that the Jewish mindset came out of a part of the world where polytheism was practiced. And polytheism was the standard across the globe. I mean, even indigenous people here in the Americas, they worshiped a harvest god and a sun god and a moon god and anything that was unexplainable, they ascribed a divinity to it. The Greeks had their mythology, the Romans had theirs, and really the original people who became the Jews, they also were polytheists. Because when it says the Elohim basically says, let's make more of us. Like we see who we are, let's create more after our kind. It wasn't until Abraham came along. Abraham was from that part of the world, the first monotheist, who it was his ideology. He said, look, all these different gods, you're calling different names. It's actually the same one. You're talking about the same one. Which really, depending how you, it's amazing to me that fundamentalists interpreted monotheism in a way that excluded other people, because I think that's just the opposite of what that revelation was about. Like when Abraham said, all of the gods are one, or even when Moses said, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one, I don't think he was saying it's us versus them. I think he was drawing a circle around the whole world. I think Jesus was trying to say that to us when the Holy Spirit came on Pentecost. That's what that was all about. And the opposite of inclusion is exclusion. So when people saw revelation through Phariseeism, which the word Pharisee means a separatist, they said, our God is right and your God is wrong. And I don't think that's what those original patriarchs were saying. I think they were saying the Elohim who said, let us create man in our image. They were saying, God's in you, God's in me, God's up there. I'm God, you're God, we're all God. Everybody's a part of God. Even the phrase, I was thinking about it Thursday night. We went to this thing we go to every year at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And it was a little different this year. It's usually packed in there. It was a little, not as many people, and everybody had masks on, and even the choirs sang with masks, which was a little, that was different, but it was still amazing. And the woman that I love who sings O Holy Night every year, she didn't do the solo this year, which was fine. The woman who sang it had an incredible voice, but because I wasn't so tuned into her voice, I actually listen to the lyrics, and I've sung it for years. Many of you have requested it this year. I don't know. It's, you know, we'll see. I'm definitely not doing it this morning. But I was listening to the lyrics again. Really, my heart was hearing them. And that verse says, the King of Kings. First of all, the King of Kings is an implication of the Elohim. In other words, it's saying the kings have a king, but they're all kings. It's not me versus them. It's not I'm up here and you're down there. It's the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. All the lords have a lord. All the kings have a king. You could just as easily say all the gods have a god, which is really what Jesus quoted in John chapter 10 when he quoted the Psalms. He says that they were upset because he was calling himself the Son of God. He says, it says it in your own law. Have I not said you are all gods, and yet you are mortal? You will die. But so just the phrase Elohim is, I mean, the phrase King of Kings is an implication of Elohim. Let us make our, unto us a child is born. Not unto me, not unto you, unto us. We can, the child is born to a collective. But the lyric says, the King of Kings lay in a lowly manger, in all our trials, born to be our friend. He knows our need, our weakness is no stranger. Behold your King, before him lowly bend. But I love that phrase, he knows our need, our weakness is no stranger. It's very similar to Hebrews 4, says we have not an high priest who cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. All right, let me explain to you where I'm going with this, because this is a Christmas message. Unto us a child is born. Is Jesus the reason for the season? No, we're the reason for the season. Jesus came to show us that it was not about him, it was about us. Let me just let that sink in for a minute. All right. So Genesis 1:26 says, let us make people in our image. Or let us, we're the Elohim, we're the gods, plural. Let us create more gods like us. Then you go to Exodus. And I taught on this, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago. But in the Exodus, Moses is hiding on the backside of the desert because he's on the lam for a murder charge. He murdered a guy in Egypt, so he's running from the law. And one day he sees a burning bush, and he says, I'll come aside and see this thing. And a voice begins to speak to him. And the voice says to him, I want you to go to Egypt and tell Pharaoh to let the slaves go, let my people go. And Moses said, I can't, because for one thing, I have a speech impediment. We don't know what it was. We don't know if he stuttered. I see people who write that Joe Biden's in the early stages of dementia. I don't see that at all. I do know that he was a stutterer, and so he's very deliberate in the way he speaks. And it was something that he, you know, stuttering is a real thing. It has nothing to do with your intelligence. It's the way your brain affects speech patterns. But and we don't know if Moses was a stutterer, whatever it was. He basically said, I'm the wrong guy. And the voice, the I am, who we call God, says to him, well, I'm going to let your brother speak for you. And in chapter 7, in verse 1, he says, behold, I have made you as God unto Pharaoh. Remember, Genesis 1:26, the gods say, let us make more gods. Exodus 7, he says, I've made you as God. Now, this is what's interesting. You would think, you know, in this exchange at the burning bush, remember he says, throw the rod down, the rod becomes a serpent, or some kind of reptile. So, and there's a burning bush. I mean, wouldn't you think with a burning bush and sticks are turning into animals, why not just heal his impediment? Seems like that would be the appropriate thing to do. I'm going to send you to speak to Pharaoh, so I'm going to fix your speech so you can do it. And that seems to be counterintuitive to the way God works. He says, no, I'm going to send, you're going to be a stuttering God. I'm going to tell you to go to Pharaoh just like you are. And if he can't understand you, if your accent is too deep or you're stuttering too much, I'll let your brother speak for you, but I don't need to fix you. You're fine like you are. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. In other words, this thing that ostracized him from the community, from the us, and isolated him, when push came to shove, then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, "Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?" All his life, Rudolph had wanted that nose to be fixed. If the nose had been fixed, the reindeer could have never led Santa's sleigh. What's wrong with you, what you thought was wrong with you, is actually what's right with you. What's that got to do with Christmas and the Elohim? Hang on. I have many more scripture references to tell you. I'm about to rock your world, okay? So, he says, and you know, back in the day, when I used to teach a lot about Moses, and I really milked this story a lot, but I said, you know, not only did he not fix Moses' speech impediment while he's telling him, it's like telling a man who can't walk to run a marathon. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, this is, you're telling me to do the one thing I can't do. So, he not only doesn't fix his speech impediment, he hardens Pharaoh's heart, which now you're like, okay, God, what are you doing? Then Moses has to go to Pharaoh like 10 times and say, let the people go. And every time he does, God sends another plague. It's boils, it's frogs, it's blood turned to water. It's all these things. And it's like, at a certain point, you're like, God, what are you doing? You're like, you're intentionally making this unnecessarily difficult. And it's because, it's as much about Moses as it is about Egypt. The us is we, the we is I. When Jesus goes to Gadara, the demons say, my singular name is Legion, for we, plural, are many. Just let that go into your spirit. He was revealing Moses' own superpower that Moses didn't know he had, because Moses was focused on his speech impediment. All right, there's more where that came from. Hang on. John chapter 14, verse 12, Jesus says something that, you know, I've heard people teach all around this scripture, and they're so afraid they're going to sound new agey that they never really say what Jesus was saying. Jesus is speaking to his disciples, and he says, and ultimately to us, he says, this is how I do these works. He says, but you're actually going to do greater works than these, because I'm going back to where I came from. I'm getting out of the way. I am removing the I so that you can focus on the we. Because now that I'm here, like when in Genesis, he says, let us make people in our image. The gods say, let us make more gods. They're supposed to set up their own places of deity on the earth. They're supposed to operate as gods. What's wrong? Well, somebody told them they're naked, and they think they're naked. So instead of being deities, they're running around the Garden of Eden trying to find fig leaves to sew together because they feel inadequate. They're trying to hide their speech impediment. They're trying to hide what they perceive as wrong with them. Rudolph's trying to hide his red nose because the other reindeer laugh at him because of it. What you think is wrong with you is actually what makes you special. Before I give you these scriptures, let me explain to you where I'm going with this. Those of you that are comic book fans, you know, in American culture, comic books are really sort of our version of mythology. Everybody from Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Aquaman, all of them have, there's some kind of Christ figure. And but even Superman has kryptonite. He has a thing that there's a limit to him. You know, the Lone Ranger had the, was it a silver bullet? Dracula has the stake in his heart. There's a thing that each supernatural character, it shows that they are not omnipotent. They're not God big G, they're God little g, okay? But you have these, like in the Marvel comics, it's the Avengers, where you have all of these superheroes with superpowers who are not omnipotent, but they are divine. They're God's little g. They're God's, like the God Moses says, if God's God, capital G, why couldn't he just go release the people from Egypt? But no, he sends a man who's very much in touch with his limitations, and he says, I'm not going to fix your limitations. I'm going to send you just as you are, and you're going to be God to Pharaoh. He may think you're God big G, omnipotent God. I don't care. This is why when these people that get mad about saying happy holidays, let me just tell you something. If you have a Jesus that you think is over in the corner pouting because somebody didn't tell him happy birthday, you've got a really weak Jesus. I mean, the Jesus that I know is fine with Kwanzaa and Santa Claus and you name it. Like, it doesn't, he's, Jesus is a big boy. He's not saying, it's my birthday. Why aren't they celebrating my birthday? Why aren't they saying happy holidays? It's about me. I'm like, oh God, no wonder you have such a horrible life. You've got such a lousy Jesus. Anyway, so you have, like in the Marvel world, it's the Avengers. In the, is it DC Comics, that you have the Justice League, that's like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman. And I remember, like, in when I was a kid, on Saturday mornings, they had the Super Friends that was based on the Justice League. So it's the idea that there were gods, little g, who understood their superpowers and used them for good, but also were aware of their kryptonite, whatever was their, what, I don't know if every one of the superheroes had a thing that was their sort of Achilles heel. But the point is, what I'm seeing, and I've been seeing this for years, and this Christmas I see it now more than ever, is the whole purpose of creation was for God to create after his kind, or for them to create after their kind. Now, let me just, I'm not even going to qualify this statement. This whole thing that's going on now with these young people who consider themselves non-binary, and they prefer to be referred to as them because they're neither male nor female, it can be daunting at times, even in the gay community. I know a lot of gay people my age that just think it's BS. Like, that's ridiculous. There's only men and women. I think there's a reason why there's a group of people who are rethinking the finiteness of gender, because the pronouns are interchangeable. Let us make man in our image. Unto us a child is born. And the government should be upon his shoulder, but the full revelation is that when the child is born unto us, the government should be upon our shoulder. Because we're created after the ultimate act of creativity is the creator created creators. So Jesus says in John 14, you're going to actually do greater things. And Jesus had a pretty impressive resume. I mean, he's walking on water. He's raising dead people. He's healing people. He's turning water into wine. He's multiplying loaves and fish and feeding thousands of people. I mean, he's a superhero. He has superpowers. Are you saying he has kryptonite? Well, I will tell you this. Hebrews 8 says that though he was a son, he learned obedience to the things he suffered. So it seems to me Jesus didn't come in fully formed. He had to grow into his awareness. He had to grow into his Christ consciousness. He was not a baby laying there thinking, I'm it. I'm the Messiah. He, you know, he didn't really know that. I mean, his mother Mary had to push him into doing his first miracle. He didn't even want to do it. And then nearly as soon as he realized who he was, he says in John 16:7, it's necessary that I go away. It's interesting because you would think as soon as he realized who he was, he would have said, I am that I am. Now you must worship me. And he did just the opposite. Like in Matthew, it says after he multiplied the loaves and fish, the people came together to try to make him king. They were so impressed with what he could do. And he hid from them because he didn't want to do that. As soon as he realized he was an I, he said, I need to go so that you will realize we are a we. Unto us, plural, a child is born. Even in, you know, everybody loves John 3:16. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. You need to always balance John 3:16 with Romans 8:29. Romans 8:29 says, we were predestined to be conformed to his image that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. The same way that Jesus has a nativity, we have a nativity. The same way that Jesus has magician astrologers come from the East and recognize who he is, we have people from outside of our own metron who recognize us for who we are. I'm saying this with a pure heart. When a man runs for president and he says, I alone can fix it. That concept of I alone can fix it, or I know more than the generals know about war, I know more than the scientists know about COVID, or I know there, it's completely, not only is it not true, it's the antithesis of what America was ideally founded on. Look, I know those white men from Europe were slave owners and they, you know, I know all of their limitations, but the prophetic words they wrote in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution went beyond where they were in their time in history. And now in the year nearly 2022, we are just understanding what those words actually meant. And the first word of the American Constitution is the word we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, we. It's not about anybody. I don't care who you voted for. I don't care who I voted for. A president is not supposed to be a cult figure. He is a man. If you took a civics class in high school, if you understood Madisonian government, it's three co-equal branches of government: administrative, legislative, and judicial. No one person is the I. It's all the we. The whole thing was supposed to be checks and balances. And that's why there's limitations on terms that a president can run, because those people that, you know, they didn't discover America. There were indigenous people here already. But those Europeans that came, for better or for worse, that was our, you know, that was part of our history, and none of us wants to leave here, so we've got to make the best of it. But those Europeans, especially the ones that came from Great Britain, their whole thing was anti-king. We don't want to have a king. Set it up so there's not a king. We were having dinner with my friend Dominic Thursday night. He went with us to St. Patrick's, and then we had dinner. And Dominic's from, not only is he like funny Pentecostal. When I say funny Pentecostal, he's just funny the way he is about, he's serious about it, but it's funny. And, but he's also from Staten Island, and he is a true New Yorker, multi-generational New Yorker. And one thing about New Yorkers is that typically just give it to you straight. You know, New Yorkers just tell you exactly what they think. And a lot of, you know, Staten Island is very conservative and politically. So some of his Christian relatives, one of his cousins was telling him recently, he said, you know, Jesus was supposed to come back this year, but because Joe Biden stole the election and Donald Trump wasn't in office, Jesus wasn't able to come back and set up his kingdom. And Dominic said, can I ask you something? Have you lost your mind? He said, if you think Jesus is coming back, you think Jesus would not come back because of an American election? Not just about Donald Trump, but about anybody. Like, you think an American president would determine end time events? Wow. Talk about a house of cards. And we were just talking about it. I said, I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen, it's one thing if you want to embrace somebody, but when somebody becomes a cult figure, and the lines between evangelicalism and crazy conspiracy theories start coming together, it's like, wow, somebody needs to speak the truth. What's that got to do with Christmas? All right. When the Elohim says, let us make, basically they were, you know, it says, let us make man in our image, but basically they were saying, who is they, Bishop? I don't know. Moses was speaking in a very mystical way here. Elohim, you know, it's the same root word where the Muslims get Allah, Elohim. Basically, it's the gods saying, let's make more gods. Now, that's tricky territory because nearly every cult leader who, you know, ever started a, everybody from Jim Jones to David Koresh to whatever, they had Messiah complexes and said that, you know, the truth only comes through me. This is your basic litmus test, and you can apply this to me. You apply this to any teacher you listen to. Anybody who tells you that only they are right and everybody else is wrong is wrong. And that goes for me too. If you ever hear, if I ever come on here and say, stop listening to anybody else, it's only me, I alone have the truth, I alone can fix it, then pray for me, unfriend me, do whatever, say he's in the first stages of dementia, he's lost his mind, but for God's sake, do not follow me. Anytime you forget that unto us a child is born and you think it's all about you, you automatically get into error. That's why, you know, I haven't heard this in years, but back in the day, hang on. Back in the day when the church in Conyers was real big, sometimes I would hear the word cult thrown around. Like they've got a cult over there. And it's not technically a bad word. I mean, it's from the root word counterculture. Like sometimes like a movie has a cult following. So in its purest form, when you have a cult following, it just means you've got people who are very devoted to you. And I have people, some of you listening right now, you have been with me through everything. I understand why some of your families might think you're in a cult because you're like, good, you know, they're probably like, good Lord, how many places are you going to follow this guy? And it's not a cult following, it's a pastor. The sheep know the shepherd's voice. I've taught you that for years. You already know that. But what was always funny to me about the cult accusation is I'm completely opposite of a cult. Like in a cult, you can't leave. Like if you leave, you know, people come to your house and follow you and harass you and don't let you out. And I'm just the opposite. I'm like, you know, that's what I told people. I said that the difference between me and Jesus, you know, Jesus, one of the sheep leaves the 99 and Jesus goes and finds them. To me, somebody leaves me because people have been leaving me my entire ministry. If somebody leaves me, I'm thinking, well, I guess they needed some space. I guess our season is over. It never occurs to me to harass people to the point that some people think I'm indifferent. I'm not indifferent. I mean, I've had my heart broken 10 million times. But I also know I'm not the end-all, be-all. And sometimes if our season is over, like I have people now that have kind of sort of ghosted me and disappeared from my life. And there's only so many times you can text somebody saying, I'm thinking about you and whatever. And you think, I guess I just need to leave them alone. I mean, I guess you know, you seem to need space away from me, and that's okay. I'm not the only game in town. So the fact that was always my attitude means you can't ever call. I mean, if people are devoted to me, it's because they respond to the gift, not because I've manipulated them or made them buy into it or invest in it financially. I don't even know who gives. I mean, once a year, Avery says there's a thing we have to submit to the IRS that shows who gave the most. And she says, do you want to look at it? And I'll usually look over it. And I think, well, I really appreciate that people give, and that's awesome. But I don't even think that way. I don't even think that way. But here's my point about the Christmas story and why it's unto us a child is born. The original intent was that God would create gods. So he puts Adam and Eve in the garden. Adam and Eve had a paradigm shift because they created reality through the paradigm of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So they thought that this is the good part of me and this is the bad part of me. I'm just going to tell you something right now. There's no bad part of you. It's just who you are. It doesn't mean you don't have to manage it. But what you think is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You just have to know how to manage it. When Jesus has these thoughts, it was translated that Satan came to him. But if you look in the Aramaic, he was actually talking to his own thoughts. He called his own thoughts Satana, saying, if I really am who I think I am, I could cast myself down off this pinnacle, because it says in the scriptures, it is written, he will bear you up in his hands, lest you dash your foot against a stone. And yet, what Jesus says is, I'm not going to exploit my divinity. In fact, I'm going to go away. And I'm going to tell these followers of mine that they're going to do even greater works than me. I mean, that's just the opposite of a cult leader. Of course, Jesus is not the reason for the season. He would be the first one to tell you that. Bless its heart, this scripture has been so misunderstood. John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. He was not, somehow fundamentalists have perverted that into saying, unless you are a Christian, you're going to hell. That's not what Jesus was saying. He was saying, in the same way I realized my I am-ness, you're going to have to do the same thing. It's another way of saying, take up your cross and follow me. In other words, saying you will have your own mount of temptation, you will have your own mount of transfiguration, you will have your own nativity, you will have your own death, burial, and resurrection, and it will happen to you many, many times. There will be times in your life when you will feel like you have died, but you will learn to prophesy that you will be in the heart of the earth for 3 days, and on the third day you will rise again. Why? Because you saw someone set the example. He did not, I'm not telling you not to worship him. I'm saying he didn't tell you to worship him. I've read the book of Revelation. I know John's picture of him was everybody worshiping the Lamb in heaven. I understand that's a different thing. I'm saying when Jesus was here on the earth, he didn't act superior to the men that followed him. In fact, you know, in modern culture, you don't realize what a shock this was. But because in that part of the world, there wasn't necessarily a caste system like there was in India, but you've got the good people and the bad people, the higher ups and the lower downs. And when Jesus stripped down and put a towel around his waist and got on his knees and washed the disciples' feet. That was, you know, we're used to seeing that. But that was shocking to them. They were like, remember Peter says, no, I can't let you do this. Because it's not that they didn't think they were worthy of it. It's that it was like, no, we can't see you as the Christ if you're going to wash our feet, because that's going to make us view you a particular way, and we need to see you as God. And Jesus says, unless you let me do this, you have no part of me. And I can't think of a modern thing to compare that to, but it was just, now that's not, this, you know, we live in a world where people get manicures and pedicures, and there's a service industry, and people get their hair cut, and so people get massages. It's not as shocking as it would have been in that culture. But for him to do that, he was basically saying, here's everything you think about a deity, and I'm going to turn it inside out, and I'm going to deconstruct your idea of big G God so that you can see we're all gods. The point of the incarnation is that the Word becomes flesh. The deity becomes humanity. Why? So that we can see. It's not, I'm telling you, it was never to appease an angry sky god. That whole ritual of blood sacrifice, all of the religions of the ancient world, especially in the Middle East, practiced that. And in a lot of indigenous cultures, you'll see a movie where a virgin's being thrown into a volcano or something. There's this idea of an innocent one dying for the sins of the many. And there's a certain truth to it, in that when the Old Testament priest would put his hand on the scapegoat, he implemented the sins of we. There was no individual sins. Let me say it to you this way. It's time for you to realize who you are. You are God, little g. You're not God, big G. I'm not saying you're omnipotent. I'm not saying you created everything. I'm saying I'm God. I'm not God. I'm not asking you to worship me. But I remember, you know, Lord, I've referred to it so many times, but this thing that happened a couple of years ago with Ken, Howie, and Jerry, we were up, and when I lost everything on the bottom of the river, and I called it back, and I got it all. I told them, I said, I don't know how this is going to happen, but before I get to Atlanta tonight, I'm going to have all my stuff, and it's all going to be working. And it is. The phone that I'm talking into right now was on the bottom of a river for 3 hours. This watch was. The ink on the paper of the check that was written to me inside my wallet didn't even run. But what was interesting is when I posted about it, some guy, I don't know how this works on Facebook now, that people who you're not friends with can write on your post. But he said, if God gave you your keys back, why doesn't he do away with child suffering and disease and stuff? And I said, I didn't say anything about God. I didn't pray about it. I called it back. I called those things back, and they came back. I didn't say this to him because I finally just deleted his comment and blocked him. But hear me out. That was my superpower that did that. Look, I know Jesus said, I'm the vine, you're the branch. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Think about what he's saying. He's saying, you can do it because I did it. You can overcome the rumors about your paternity because I did it. I mean, remember when he goes to his hometown, they said, this is Joseph the carpenter's son. His sisters live down the street from us. And it affected the way that he saw himself. He couldn't do any mighty miracles there. But the point is, I'm not saying I don't pray anymore. I recognize there's a higher power. I understand that. But I also have read the scriptures, and I have the Holy Ghost and the Holy Spirit, and I know what these scriptures, what they really mean. It's like the Christmas story is an inspiration to me that I have the Spirit of Christ. I have the mind of Christ. I can do the Christ miracles and even greater ones than he did. It's an inspiration. I identify it with it. And I'm very much in touch with my own humanity, with my own whatever. I can be as immature as the next guy at times. But the King of Kings lay in a lowly manger in all our trials. He was born to be our friend, not our judge. We have not an high priest that cannot be touched with the feelings of our weaknesses. All this stuff, and people say, I'm trying to get closer to God, I'm trying to be a better Christian. That's nonsense. Be who you are. You're fine just like you are. Look at the men that Jesus chose to be his disciples. Talk about a ragtag group of, what was he thinking? Jesus, do you not have access to a headhunter that could find you a better staff? These are all the wrong guys, and Jesus knew exactly who they were, never tried to change any of them. I mean, I know that goes against your idea of what it means to be born again, but he just didn't. He just did not try to change people. We were in Times Square. Some of you that have been to New York have seen this. There's a guy, he's not naked, but he calls himself Naked Cowboy. He's standing out there, kind of a muscle guy, cowboy hat, cowboy boots. He has white briefs on. People pay to take pictures with him. I've been there, it was cold yesterday, it was 40 degrees, but I've been there in snow, and he's standing out there in his underwear. And he's been there at least since 1998. And I looked at him, and I had to post about him. I said, you got to give this guy kudos for a work ethic. I mean, good grief. He's standing out for better or for worse. Some people say, oh, Bishop, he's nasty. You shouldn't be posting about that. Look, a sex worker came and washed Jesus' feet with her hair. And he said, I know what she does. Her sins, which are many, are forgiven because she loved much. He didn't tell her, now, sweetie, you need to stop what you're doing. You stop turning tricks and go join a nice church and, sing in the choir. He didn't say that. If that was her choice, if that was her I am-ness, then fine. But this whole idea of trying to make clones of people and saying, this is what it is to be a Christian and we're the ones who are right and the rest of you are wrong, I just can't support it. And I especially can't support it at Christmas. It flies in the face of everything that Christmas was about. And that doesn't mean we sit up in St. Patrick's and sang, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and Oh Come All Ye Faithful, and Joy to the World, and Silent Night, and there's profound theology in them. Dominic was sitting between Ken and me, and on several of those things, we'd look at each other, and our eyes would fill up with tears. Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see. Hail the incarnate deity. Pleased as men with men to dwell. Jesus our Emmanuel. I mean, that's some powerful theology. You say you want sound teaching, there's your sound teaching. But it's not at the expense of other people. It's not Jesus saying, it's my party and I'll cry if I want to. That's not, oh my God, I can't stand that Jesus. If that's your Jesus, that's fine. Go to your little country club, find your little cult leader, cut out all the other people that you think are the bad ones. Bishop, the sheep are going to be separated from the goats. They're both inside of you, the sheep, you're the sheep, you're the goat. The fire comes to remove the part of you that's not showing your deity. Yeah, well, we're going to fly away. Bible says two men will be sleeping in bed, one will be taken, one will be left. You're the same person. It's saying the person that you don't need to be. If anything needs to change, it will change with the fire of God. You don't have to strive with it. You don't have to try to do anything about it. It's who you are. There's nothing holier than saying, this is who I am. I am this. And if it's not somebody's definition of Christian or Orthodox or whatever, fine, that's on them. You celebrate the Jesus who we are celebrating during the winter solstice, that unto us a child is born. That includes all of us. I can see you're blowing me up on comments here, so I can't wait to read them. Thank you for those of you that have supported financially during 2021. We appreciate it. Like I told you, Wednesday night, we've just given to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Next month, we will give, we're definitely going to do something about the tornado relief in Kentucky. I'm planning on doing it through Red Cross because I'm used to working with the Red Cross. I'm not opposed to possibly working with another group, but we're definitely going to give something to that. That thing is horrible. I can't even imagine. And I know there's people who want to make it about their theology and they think it's pestilences and stuff. Listen, for people that have lost everything, don't make it worse for them by adding on ridiculous political implications to it or whatever. Just help if you can. I don't have any answer for that. That's a horrible, horrible thing. I understand when people say if God's God, there's a loving God, why are there things like that happen in the world? Hey, touche. It's a fair point. The closest I can come with an answer is we've all been trying to worship the big G God and we haven't understand that we're all the little G God. And because everybody who comes on the earth hasn't been taught that they are the Justice League, that they are the Avengers, that's why the earth isn't better, because we keep waiting for this sky deity to do it. And he's already told us, you're not naked. Just go take care of business. But I did want you to know that we continue to give. We also, some of you remember Stephen, who went with us on a few of our meditation weekends, who led everybody. He brought his mom a couple times. She passed away a few days ago. He didn't ask for this, but we sent him something to help with expenses. It was unexpected, and it's a bit of a shock. He's an only child and was very close to her. So we do benevolences all along, and because you continue to give, that's possible. If you want to give to Metron for your tax purposes, go to bishinthenow.com. It's just a click of a button. It's very easy to do. If you want to give to me personally for Christmas, two or three of you have already given to me for Christmas, and I appreciate it. It helped us this weekend on our trip, and it'll help me with doing my shopping this week for my kids. And I just speak abundance on you. I whether you call it sowing and reaping a karma or whatever, I believe I'm not speaking all of the truth. I don't have the market cornered on it, but I'm telling the truth. I mean, what you just heard is the truth. It's not all the truth, but it's the truth. So I'm hoping I'll see you first Sunday of January. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen the next few days with the pandemic, but that's the plan for now. All right. Merry Christmas. Can't wait to read your comments. I love you very much. Happy holidays.